Dr. Elaine Schroeder. Welcome to Mind Over Matter, a monthly K2 radio show that explores issues of the heart as well as of the mind. And on tonight's show, we'll explore the experiences that women have after leaving prison. We'll look at our prison system, who goes to jail, what are the experiences of former inmates, and particularly, what are the experiences that women have after they are released. I'm fortunate tonight to have two wonderful women on my show. Cara Nelson has experiences on both sides of the prison gate, that is, being an inmate, as well as a professional helping women after they are released from jail. Cara is the director of Haven House, a recovery and reentry program for women coming out of prison. And also with us tonight is Yvonne Bennett, who is a resident, a current resident of Haven House. So welcome, Cara and Yvonne. So glad to have you tonight.
Thank you. We're happy to be here.
So first, let's start with Cara. Tell me about yourself and what led you on a long, long road to become director of Haven House. Where does it all
well,
begin?
Well, a long road it's been. So, again, my name is Cara Nelson, and I am a person in long-term recovery. And for me, that means I have not taken a drink or a drug since June 1st, 2011. Ironically, that's the same day I got out of prison for the very last time. I spent the better half of 20-plus years in active addiction and going in and out of prison throughout the state in pretty much every facility a woman could be in. And so, you know, it brings me to the passion and the calling that I now get to give back to my communities, many of the communities that I took from for so long.
Hmm. Where'd you grow up?
I grew up, actually, my dad was a logger, and we grew up in different logging camps in southeast Alaska, mainly back and forth to Ketchikan. I spent the majority of my life in Ketchikan until 2005, when I was charged with two felony convictions related to drug charges. Mm-hmm. And that was where I started this next journey, which was now having the label of being a felon, mm-hmm. which I didn't know what that meant for until I got out. And also, which led me to Juneau, where my family had moved while I was in prison and had taken my children and took care of them while I was, their dad and I were in prison.
Oh, both their dad and
yes.
you were in prison.
Mm-hmm.
Were you arrested simultaneously?
We were. We were co-defendants.
Oh, okay. And how long has it been since you've been out of prison?
The last time I stepped out as an inmate was June 1st, 2011, 7 a.m.
That
wake
recently,
up call.
Okay, so 2011.
Yes.
Well, now what I'm really interested in is how you came. Well, there's so much to talk about.
Right.
Because,
yes,
we want to talk about what Haven House is. First, so folks know, why don't you describe Haven House?
Okay.
What is it?
Haven House is a faith-based, peer-led recovery residence for women who are coming home to their community after incarceration. We really focus on it being a recovery environment. It's, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean that people are coming straight from prison, but usually they have somewhat of a background in the criminal justice system.
Okay.
As we know, there's a lot of people in prison for substance use and mental health disorders because we don't have the proper supports in the community.
How many folks are in Haven House that could be at any given time?
Up to 8 women can live at Haven House. We have a live-in resident manager, and then there's a house manager, and then myself. So I have 1 paid staff, and then the resident manager is a volunteer live-in position.
Okay. And before we get to you, Yvonne, I want to... So there was about 7 years between when you were released from prison and
mm-hmm.
today.
Mm-hmm.
I know what a competent, well-organized, articulate, smart woman you are because I've spent enough time with you and your reputation very positive reputation follows you. I ran into June Degner the other day.
Oh, yes.
And mentioned that we were doing the show, and June is president of the board of Haven House.
She is one of the founders.
That's a seven-year journey to have a very, very responsible position. What else were you doing before Haven House?
Oh, dear. Well, I have to tell you, very shortly after getting out of prison, my dad was Googling supports for women coming home after incarceration, mainly because obviously he had a daughter who was walking through that as well. And he came across Haven House. At the time, they were just meeting, you know, as a very early board. And so they asked him to be on the board and asked me to come to the next meeting and share my story. And so after I shared my story, they offered me a place on the board. And that's the rest is history. That was in 2000. I had not been out of prison for even a year.
Mm-hmm.
They were a huge part of who I am today because people had the compassion and they treated me as Kara, you know, not my past.
Yeah.
And so they really valued my experience and, you know, where I was at the time.
Okay. And Yvonne.
Yes.
You're a resident. How long have you been at Haven House?
I've been at Haven House since February.
Mm-hmm.
I got released from Lemon Creek in January, so as soon as I got out, then I applied to go to the Haven House.
Mm-hmm.
And I got accepted, like, immediately, and it's just, it was a matter of me wanting to, like, recover and get the support that they have there. There's just so much support there. Mm. It's unbelievable. So, but yeah, I've been there since February.
Well, you know, you talk about recovering after you are just released from prison, but for the, how long were you in prison?
I was living up in Anchorage last year and I was like in and out for the whole entire year. And then I moved back to Juneau in September. And like a week after I got back, I was remanded for a dirty way.
And so, would you want to explain that?
Okay. I went in for a probation visit and they tested me and I came out positive for drugs. And so they took me back to Lemon Creek and I'd only been back in Juneau for like a week. And I got out like 2 weeks later and I was remanded again. Yes, okay. I was remanded again. And I was opted into the PACE program, which is a program to get tested. You call in daily, and if your color comes up, then you have to go in and do a random UA. And so I got opted into PACE court, and the first day they gave me like I had to tell them what I was doing, and of course I was using at the time, but they kind of let you try to get yourself cleaned up. But I ended up going back in the next day. I got rearrested again
for probation.
We got pulled over like 6 o'clock in the morning, and so I'd been in the PACE program for 24 hours.
Mm.
And I was sitting in front of the judge, and he said I wasn't off to a great start, and I wasn't. So it was sad. I mean, it's been like this. I really wanted to do good, and I didn't know where to go, and I was struggling. And so I continued to still use, and then I ended up going back into Lemon Creek. They gave me 3 days that time. And then, like, probably a couple weeks later, I went back in and I got called in, and then I got called in again, and I was, I got another dirty UA, and so I went back in again. And then I went on the run. So I was absconding. I was out for like a month.
Were you hiding?
Yes.
Here in Juneau?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I got arrested on Christmas Day, which was horrible. My family was so, I hurt my family, and it's just been, like, really difficult. So I went in on Christmas Day, and I really had a lot of time to think about what I needed to do in order to change where my life was actually going. It was really hard, because when you first go in there, it's like you feel really hopeless. You don't have any, like, you don't know, like, what's going to happen when you walk out, because it's all up to you what you want to do. And I just wanted it to change. I really got tired of how I was living, and I got released on my son's birthday on January 24th, and when I got released, I got help from friends and family, and I decided that I was going to stay sober, and I've been sober since December 25th, so I ended up applying to go to the Haven House. And I heard Kara's name, like, the whole entire time. Like, the day that I got arrested on Christmas Day, somebody mentioned her name, and then her name kept on getting brought up. And then her name was getting brought up when I was out in the community, and then the person that I was staying with brought up her name and introduced me to Kara, and that's how I got to Kara.
Mm.
And how I got to meet her for the first time. And ever since then, it's been just incredible. It's been, things that have been happening in my life are amazing. It's just one thing after another, and I'm really grateful.
What's been incredible?
Mm-hmm.
What, like,
it's just, there's been so many good changes. I mean, I went from being homeless up in Anchorage and putting myself in, like, really dangerous situations. My mom was always calling because she was so worried about me up there. And she pleaded with me to come back. And it took me a while to get back. And she really encouraged me, because Anchorage, she was just super worried about what was going on up there. And I got into more drugs up there. And it just wasn't good. But I came back finally. And that was my first step. And then as soon as, like, I sobered up and I got out and I decided to make that change, there's just been so many good things. It's like I have a really good relationship with my family. My sister is also out at the Haven House.
Uh-huh.
And we've never really known each other because she's been in and out all these years. And this
in and out of Juneau?
In and out of jail.
Are you from Juneau?
We're from Hoonah.
Okay.
Yeah. But I've been living in Juneau since 1987. My parents live here. But yeah, my sister's out there. She got out in March, and so we've been spending all this time together. And we've established, like, we've got such a good family dynamic now. I mean, it's like we're working on it, and things are going really well, things that couldn't have happened if we were still out there.
Yeah.
And I'm getting ready to go to school. I leave in...
To school?
Yes.
Where?
I'm going to Everett, Washington. I'm going to go and do nails. I'm getting everything ready right now. I leave October.
Huh.
I know. I'm so excited.
Is it a technical college?
Yes, it is.
Everett, like Everett Technical or something community?
It's Evergreen. It's called Evergreen.
Okay.
It's in Everett.
Yeah.
But yeah, everything happened really fast at that. That was like amazing. I just, like, we were talking about it all year, and I didn't know if that was something I wanted to do, but I've been always wanting to do that. That's been, like, my passion, to do something like that. And now that I, like, things are happening and things are going the way it is, it's just all of these things that I've always, like, thought about are actually happening. And it wouldn't be happening if I was still out there using and drinking. And I'm just like, I'm so grateful for the Haven House.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They've helped me a lot. They're like, there's somebody there all the time. I've had, like, incidents where I just, like, I've called and they were there in, like, 5 minutes. And that is, something I just, like, I can't believe sometimes, but it's, like, Kara and Julie and Jackie and everybody that has played a part in my recovery right now, I really am so thankful for everything that they've done. My mom, she's really, like, you could tell that she's really happy.
Is she?
Yeah.
Oh.
She doesn't have to worry so much.
Yeah.
She doesn't have to, like, wonder what's going on. But, yeah, I'm doing good.
Now, you've been there, did you say, since January?
I've been there
February?
Since, yeah, February.
February. Now, as part of being at Haven House, getting a job, did you get a job?
It is part of being at the Haven House, and I was going to look for a job, and then I got this, I started looking into school, and so I decided that I would work on, like, my loans and trying to work with all of these different agencies. Right now I'm working with Clinkett and Haida and DBR, and there's a couple other agencies that are going to help me pay for the school. So
yeah,
it's just that consumes a lot of my time. So, and I'm leaving in a couple of months, but
yeah
normally we do have to get a job, and but mine is, I'm going to go to school, so
good.
I'm like,
good.
Excited.
Good, good, good. Carl, we didn't finish quite talking about you, because when I Googled you and looked at your bio, I noticed that you got a very important award.
Oh,
recently.
Yeah.
Would you tell us what that is?
Oh, dear. Yeah, so I was in Washington, D.C. 2 months ago receiving an award with James Comey of the FBI.
Yeah.
3 days before he got fired.
We all know where we are.
Before he got fired. One of his last pictures. I don't know. It's called the FBI Community Directors Community Leadership Award, and it's for furthering justice within the state of Alaska. I was nominated by Stacy... I can never pronounce her name correctly, and our special agent for Alaska. And it was just blew me away.
Yeah.
They actually, real quick, funny story of how they told me about it. I had met them on a panel I'd done up in Anchorage on a film called Chasing the Dragon, and we were kind of on the same page, but, you know, I'm always fighting for recovery support services to always be at the table and not just scare tactics and the problem, to always have a solution there. And so that's how we met. And so they called me when they were coming to Juneau and asked if I wanted to go to lunch. I mean, FBI special agent, you know.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sorry, I do have a criminal background. And so, like, I called my best friend, Christina Love, and I was just like, hey, I know I got to meet these guys in 10 minutes. You got to come with me. I'm not saying nothing's going down, but, you know, it was just a funny joke, because when I showed up, they were laughing at me that I brought a friend, and they shared with me that they flew here to let me know that I had...
They flew all the way here to let you know about this award.
Yeah, it was really powerfully incredible. You know, there's so many things in my life on this journey that are just, like, so God-driven and so out there that I have... stop trying to understand it, and I just keep moving, you know, because it's just too much to comprehend sometimes.
You also won a fellowship.
Absolutely, yeah.
Tell me about that.
So Just Leadership USA has an audacious goal of de-incarcerating America in half by the year 2030. An audacious goal that we are all working towards. Glenn Martin, who is the founder of Just Leadership USA, has just been an incredible mentor and a nationwide criminal justice advocate who was also formerly incarcerated. So it's a formerly incarcerated 12-month leadership training. They're not training you to be a leader. They're taking leaders in communities and just pulling out what you already
know. So you have to be formerly incarcerated and already a leader in the community.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. Already a leader in the community. So this was the most incredible opportunity I mean, I use, you know, just the value of being there, knowing I'm not alone, first of all. You know, being formerly incarcerated, a woman in long-term recovery makes for a good story, but we have to be in leadership roles. This is too important. People are dying. People are being incarcerated for poverty and you know, substance use and mental health disorders and homelessness and you name it.
Right.
So we have to have a voice because there's people making decisions for myself, my family, and my loved ones and my community. And as Glenn loves to say, those closest to the problem are closest to the solution,
mm-hmm.
but furthest from power and resources.
Yes, yes. And you've talked to me about peer support. There is actually a training program, is that, for peer support individuals? And I know you had mentioned your philosophy about the experience versus, shall we say, the formal degrees.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there is value in the full spectrum of both clinical services as well as authentic peer support. I think that we've had to fight for a long time, and we're now at a level we don't have to fight anymore. We're just doing the work. And when I say fight, I mean to validate our skill set.
Yeah.
Our skill set of being able to sit with one person. When I go into a prison and people know, well, I mean, we live in a small state too, so there's a lot of people I was
you
in prison
know.
With that are still there or know, you know. But there's an instantaneous trust that you just can't get anywhere else, and then we get to facilitate them to the proper agencies and solutions. But also in the recovery and reentry realm, there is absolutely nothing that that can match just the power of that lived experience sharing with someone. I'm not any better than anyone else, but I'm going to show you how I got through it, and I'm going to show you how I sustain it.
Yeah.
And I'm also going to let the professionals and the clinical side know where the gaps are, because you cannot teach someone how it feels to sit in a prison cell or how it feels as you're going through these different sectors along the recovery continuum of care.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's take a short musical break, and then Cara and Yvonne and I will be back to talk some more about Haven House and particularly women's lives and what they're like after incarceration. Welcome back to Mind Over Matter. I'm Dr. Elaine Schroeder, and with me in the studio tonight is Karen Nelson and Yvonne Bennett. We've been talking about Haven House, which is a relatively new program for women coming out of prison. And we've also been talking about Yvonne and Kara's background. Yvonne is a resident of Haven House, and Kara is the director of Haven House. And I just found out that I should have known this, but that Kara is a roller girl. And Yvonne, I think you should also be
right?
one.
Everyone.
I think you know how sometimes we want to defend ourselves, because so we take women's defense, self-defense, and karate. I think being a roller girl would just like, it's like one of those superwoman movies, you know?
It definitely is, and you feel like a superwoman when you're getting a good booty punch in there.
Okay.
I haven't put my skates on for about a year, but it never goes away.
Okay. So let's give me a sense of Haven House. I know there was a real controversy about it. Give us a little background on that, Kara.
So we found a home, which, you know, that was a large process to go through, and we found the perfect home. And when we decided to move forward, we had an informational gathering. You know, I believe that I feel lucky that I was very naive at the time as we moved forward, because maybe it would have been difficult to keep going.
If you had known what the future would bring.
But now it's just such a strength, you know, and such a platform. And it was such a great journey to walk through. So, you know, there were some permit issues that happened, and some very
permit issues. Mm-hmm. There was community in the neighborhood, right?
Yes.
There was some opposition to you coming in.
Everyone thought Haven House was a great idea. They just didn't want it in their neighborhood. And there were some miscommunications and some different things that all kind of layered into this perfect storm of really what it came down to was being able to utilize the situation as a platform to say, I hear that you have these legitimate fears based upon maybe addiction, maybe on criminal activity that you've experienced in your past. But what we're doing here is going to show you something different, and it's called recovery. And we are your neighbors, we are your mothers, we are your sisters, we are your daughters. When people would speak about women they had never met, and it was in the media, you know, I took that personal, because they were talking about me. And so it was both a personal and a professional journey that you, I wish somebody would have, you know, done a documentary on it or something. It was a great part of history of really hearing all sides of the story, but still moving forward with boldness and grace and integrity. And so, yes, we had many, many neighborhood meetings. Planning Commission at first had called us a halfway house, which was incorrect. They had, you know, and so it was just kind of
right, because a halfway house is part of one sentence. And these are women who are free.
Right.
Yeah.
And that was one of the things we had to prove was, you know, what does it mean? What does it mean when someone's on probation? And so it really actually created this space for our entire state to really look at some of the ordinances, not just in Juneau, but also on a statewide level within Department of Corrections, also fair housing laws, you know, because, it, I mean, 90% of people are getting out of prison. You know, and so are we going to have supportive, wonderful structure for them, or they're everywhere as it is? You know,
what do you mean 90%?
90% of people that are in prison, are coming home.
Oh, I see.
And they're not coming to your home; they're coming to their home. We all live here. We are all part of your community.
90% of people are going to live in the community.
Yes,
they're going to live somewhere.
Yep. And so at the time, we were not talking as a state. We were not, you know, as someone in recovery, I wasn't sharing out loud. The stigma and the shame is just so debilitating and oppressive, and mm-hmm. we live with that our whole lives, and so it's something that we became used to. As someone who's been to prison, having that felon label, felons are for life, right? The label, it never goes away. Could be 100 years down the road, you still got that felony. You're still considered a felon in the basically you're a three-quarter citizen at that point, no matter what you've done in your life afterwards. And so it really actually that was the time I found Just Leadership USA. It's also when we had John Schinholzer come up and the Reentry Coalition started, and he mm-hmm. we did our very first recovery coach training at that time, and that was in 2013 or 14, I can't remember. Years all run together now, but that was, like, I watched this documentary called The Anonymous People, and it blew my mind. And it really hits at home about sharing our stories out loud, recovering out loud. You know, we can only break the stigma by owning who we are and moving forward in the solution and being a part of the solution. We all see the tragedies we're living in. We were watching it in our very own neighborhood. We wanted to do something good. People wanted solutions. We were bringing it, and then they were coming against us. So we decided, I say we, but this was a very personal journey for me at that time, to really rise above and make a path for others to come and create a space for others to step into, and I believe that's what we did. I'm very emotional. I'm sorry.
Well, congratulations on succeeding, because I know it was a tough road. It was one of those classic NIMBY, not in my backyard. The good thing is at least people supported the idea. They just didn't want it next door.
It just showed that we needed a lot more community education, because their fears were very legitimate based upon their experiences.
So,
you know, I would like to believe, and I see it every day, that that's not the case today. We have an amazing neighborhood. We have great relationship. You know, there's always going to be something that maybe someone isn't happy with, but I can say 150% we did our part, and we continue to build those relationships.
I notice here I have a list that you gave me of the services that Haven House does. And Yvonne, I'd like you to think about, as I'm going to list them, which service has been most useful. So, developing individual recovery plans with each resident, cooperative living in a group setting, which is a big deal. It's a real big deal. Maintaining house rules, including strict prohibition on substance or alcohol use, supporting residents in getting jobs, training, and education, helping residents reunite with their family. That's quite literal, since you're with your sister at Haven House. Connecting you to services in the community, helping you find permanent housing, supporting women through healthy peers, mentors, and role models, helping you meet terms of probation, because we heard that was a little tricky for you for a while. Okay. And then having fun and supporting each other as residents. So which, what do you think was the biggest boost for you?
At the very beginning, I think it was just trying to get everything all organized for me, because it's like when I stepped out and I had like no direction and I had no like idea of where I was actually going. And then I, got to the Haven House, and Kara and them just kind of helped me like sort through like everyday things mm-hmm. that everybody does. But when you walk out of prison and you feel like you really don't have the support, or you don't know what direction you're going, because you're still you're trying to maintain your sobriety and trying to maintain how you're like going to figure things out day to day. And Kara and Julie sat down with me and they helped me like sort through like things that I needed to do. Mm-hmm. Like, they were really excited about helping me, and it made me feel so much better about knowing that there was these two beautiful women that actually just cared about me. And it just, they helped me with trying to figure out what my future goals were, and I still didn't know what I really wanted to do. I was going back and forth with school and work, and I was trying to establish my relationship with my daughter, and there was things going on, and so they helped me balance, like, my family and school, and they let me have time to figure things out, and they drove me around if I needed to have, like, if I needed to get to appointments, and we have, like, these things that we do, like, we have devotional, like, Tuesday and Thursday, and then we have, like, these huge dinners that we do, and it's family, and it's just getting reconnected with everybody and trying to, like, we invite the community to dinner on Tuesday, and we, one of the girls are signed up for that night, and it's so much fun. I mean, it's just, we have, we learn how to, like, have a normal life, and yeah. That's what they're teaching us out there, and it's, because when we're out there, we forget how
yeah.
to, live a normal life, and so just the basic things that Kara and Julie and everybody have been able to reestablish for my life has been pretty amazing. I mean, I'm going to meetings. They have the UAs that we do just to keep us accountable. I do the UAs there, and I do the UAs with probation. They go to our meetings with probation if we need to. I know when I first got out, I was, like, really terrified because I didn't know what to expect. I'd just been, like, in and out for, like, a year and trying to actually just try to trust the system was really difficult for me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know where I was going to begin, but they do walk through a lot with us. It was really huge. I mean, I've gone through so much, and it's Kara and them have walked through some pretty painful things that I've gone through, and if I was by myself, I probably would have relapsed.
Yvonne, what this brings up to me is the question I've always had, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This is intuitive. Now, in truth, I did work in a jail. So I worked in Seattle's Juvenile Detention Center. Mm-hmm. I was a counselor there many, many years ago. And I worked with girls in jail who were in for prostitution, and that inspired me to do my PhD dissertation on teenage prostitution. And, of course, I learned so much about these girls' lives.
Mm-hmm.
I learned how there's no accident they ended up on the streets. They often came from homes that were very abusive, particularly sexually abusive.
Mm-hmm.
And not always, but almost always. And, of course, they had to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to survive, they often worked as sex workers. So when I think of adults or kids who've been in jail for years, but adults who've been in jail for years, it's such an unhealthy and harsh environment that completely, I'm making up a new word, unprepares you for life outside.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden, you're released. And what do? Give you $5 and you get your clothes or something like that? No $5?
No.
Nothing?
Nothing.
No. And you just have to make sure somebody picks you up?
Yes.
And you have no job?
No job.
And
we have nothing.
Kara, you said something about being a three-quarters citizen,
mm-hmm.
if you're a felon.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got a felony, which every time you apply for a job,
right.
you're supposed
right.
to
right.
write that down.
Mm-hmm.
And so here's what I want to know from both of you. Let's start with Kara. What happens? A woman gets out of jail,
mm-hmm.
and I would think, like your story about how you know, the difficulties you had
mm-hmm.
Staying clean and sober, I would just think it's like setting somebody up to fail.
Yeah.
So tell me about it.
Well, absolutely what you just said. The system is set up for us to fail. Not anymore. I mean, we are making a lot of changes to have solution, but we have a long ways to go. When I was released for the first time was in 2008 for my felonies. I, first of all, had no idea what it meant to be a felon. And I had been successful prior to that in Ketchikan, you know, and had different kind of careers and whatnot. And it just blew my mind how impossible it was for me to move forward. And I had resources. And this is part of the passion why I do what I do. If it was that impossible for me, you know, and I have family and I have, you know, I had somewhat of an education and, you know, resources. How much harder is that for the women that I left behind? How much harder is that for women who don't have a family, who don't have resources? I mean, I just had no clue what it meant.
How hard is it to get
this felon? So once you have that felony, that trumps everything. That trumps everything. It doesn't matter what I've done before, anything. So, you know, I went to jail several more times after that for getting violated on dirty urine samples. It took me 7 years to do a 4-year probation sentence. And so what that means is I kept going back to jail, you know, for dirty UA. I had seven, by the time I got done, I had seven violations. It's a miracle that I sit here today and do the work that I do, but it's also because I had opportunity and I had people that believed in me, even when I didn't believe in myself or know that for myself.
Well, you had said the other day that there aren't many jobs. You have to create your own job.
Yep.
There aren't many jobs. Mm-hmm. Now, Yvonne, after you get your training... to be a, would it be a nail stylist? What do you call it?
Nail tech.
Nail tech.
Yeah.
Will your, do you have a felony?
I do. And I have three felonies.
Three. What will that do to you trying to get a job?
Well, with me, I've been able to get jobs. I've been very fortunate, but I've always sabotaged it. I would do well, and then I would get let go because I was using, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I think after I get done, I've already got something. It sounds like everything has been, like, mapped out for me already. I'm going to school. I've been talking to this lady that owns a business here in Juneau.
Are you going to come back?
I'm coming back.
And then you'll work at a nail salon?
Yes, I will.
Ah, great.
And then... I'm going to open up my own business.
Uh-huh.
I'm like envisioning it, and I've never ever like seen it to the end. I've always like, but now it's like I talk about it and it just makes me so happy that I'm actually like leaving. I'm kind of getting like, I'm trying not to get stressed out, but I know that in the end, when I come back and I open this business, it's going to be amazing. I still can't believe that it's actually falling into place the way it is, because it's just one thing after another. There's a lady that owns a business out in the valley, and she's been speaking to me. So once I come back, and she told me just to contact her, and she's going to work with me and try to get everything all set
that's
up for
great.
Me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have trouble getting jobs?
Yeah, I did. And I actually had gone to school and worked through DVR here in town to be a real estate appraiser. And I did that for about 2 years when I had filed to get my licensing after doing all the hours. I was denied because of my felonies. And so it just, you know, I wish I would have known that before, maybe. I don't know. But it really speaks to the higher purpose, you know, that we found with the controversy we went through with Haven House and overcoming that and then continuing forward, that we're going to keep beating our head against the wall until we actually change policies that are in alignment with treating us as human beings, having dignity and respect for all humans.
Yes.
You
and,
know,
and,
I mean, it's pretty simple, it feels like, but it really isn't. The first time I went and voted, I was just couldn't believe how overcome with emotion I was that...
Because you couldn't vote before?
I could not vote until I was done all the way finished with probation. And I got a letter. And so it'd been about a decade I was disenfranchised.
Really?
Yeah.
There's Senate Bill 91.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what that is.
Senate Bill 91 is an omnibus bill that is, there's a wide range of things in it. Everything from allowing people like myself who had felonies that were drug related, I could never get food stamps, I could never get public assistance. So when I had my three kids, when I got out, there was no way to get up on my feet. And I just needed that initial help, you know. I'm reunifying with my children. All the way from, you know, getting driver's license back. I know so many people that have already gotten their license back as a result of SB 91.
You mean before that bill passed, you could, because of a felony, you couldn't have a driver's license?
Mm-hmm. So there's a process now, and I don't know the particulars off the top of my head, but I have at least three friends who were not able to get themselves to work, you know, or be a part of their children's life, or, you know, there is a huge upside of bringing opportunity, and I really know that I know that I know that people are being incarcerated today because, like I said before, substance use and mental health disorders are not being treated in our communities. And so then we're blaming DOC for being the largest mental health provider we have.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to be a part of the solution. So does DOC. So does our community. And this really just gave us an avenue and a space to do that. There are definitely, you know, it's not perfect. Every crime that's ever committed in our state gets blamed on SB 91 as if they weren't happening prior to that. And we don't have this incredible heroin epidemic going on in our state. And so, you know, it's really finding this balance of getting truth out there and community education surrounding that.
Okay. We're going to take a very short music break again. And Cara and Yvonne and I will come back and talk some more. Specifically, I think I'd like to talk about our prison system versus prisons in Europe. And wind up after that with some bright notes about Haven House. Thank you. Welcome back to Mind Over Matter. I'm Dr. Elaine Schroeder, and with me in the studio tonight is Kara Nelson, who is the director of Haven House. And with her is a resident of Haven House, Yvonne Bennett. So we've been talking about major obstacles that women face after they leave prison and the need for reentry services. I, over the years, have read several articles comparing the U.S. system of incarceration and basically Northern Europe, but, you know, Europe in general, the European system. And I'm sure it's probably very similar to Australia and Japan and Canada, a much more effective system. One person who was interviewed, who's the head of corrections, and I think it's in Nebraska, called, she said after going to Norway, she saw our prison system as ineffective, costly, and cruel. And kind of just like what we were talking about, it just doesn't prepare you for anything. So have you read about prison systems elsewhere, Kara? Yeah. What's the difference?
Well, the difference is they treat people like human beings. I mean, really, that is the main difference. We treat prisoners in the United States like animals, cage animals, solitary confinement's used. It is absolutely inhumane.
It's more than that. I mean, well, inhumane, how could it be more than that?
It creates
mental illness.
Absolutely.
It harms the brain. It is cruel and unusual punishment.
Yes.
Solitary.
So our system is built exactly as it was created to be built. And I'm saying that with absolute confidence. And so it's really part of my mission and others just like me to dismantle that and really bring in real solutions while creating them in the community and just being at every table, you know, going to policymakers, going to, you know, speak and really speak truth to all the power.
Yes.
That we have. In Norway, they have, they're in prison. Being in prison alone is traumatic, period. Being in prison as a woman is so much more complex than men. Mm-hmm. If you look at our prison here in Juneau, Alaska, Lemon Creek Correctional Center is a man's prison, meaning that it is not made for women, meaning that we get to fit into a man's prison. We don't get, you know, the same timeout. We don't get the same programming. We have to walk in front of men anytime you walk to the gym or anywhere else. And so you can imagine most people incarcerated are, you know, have had a lot of trauma in their life prior to going. But being in prison in itself is traumatic. And it also is a proven fact that when you keep people in prison for a longer period of time, it actually decreases public safety instead of treating them like human beings and not ripping them away from their families.
They're less able to
It's not rehabilitation
adjust.
Either.
Yeah, it's not rehabilitation. Wow. And we know that the recidivism rate in Norway, we'll use Norway because I just recently read an article about Norway, is minuscule compared to that in the United States. And I have 2/3 of prisoners are back in custody within 3 years of release. And 55% committed a new offense. So we can see, actually, with your example, Yvonne, how you would have nowhere to go. You had no support. First of all, you weren't prepared for departure from prison. It wasn't like, wouldn't it be wonderful if there was a cosmetology school or how to do nails or something like that? Then you have to, when you apply for a job, isn't there usually a box that says, check here if you've committed a felony?
Yes.
And is that still required?
It is at the moment. We do have, the Alaska Criminal Justice Commission is working diligently to face some of these issues that we have, like ban the box, deal with, you know, expungement of certain felonies and different things like that. And they've done an incredible job. They were also a part of the SB 91 recommendations, you know, and kind of going through that process. And now the implementation is now coming to pass for different probation laws. We have pretrial that is starting in a different way here in Alaska. And so, you know, we have made strides, but we still have so much further to go. And everyone has got to do things differently. When you look at Norway, I mean, even their most violent offenders are living in a room that is not a cell block,
yeah.
You know, where you're using the restroom in front of your roommates right there.
Right.
You know, I mean, I just, you know, there's certain things.
It doesn't dehumanize you.
No. There is nothing that can explain what it feels like to be under lights 24 hours a day or you know, just the noises. Even when I go in sometimes now, I go in the prison all the time. I love it. It's my favorite thing to do. I love going in. Those are my people.
Mm-hmm.
I feel comfortable in there. But I didn't at first. Took a little bit of time. The noises, you know, they trigger, you know, the rattling of the keys, the uniforms, the voices, the rooms, you know, so.
Yes. And what a haven is Haven House. And what an amazing thing to be, an amazing place and service. It is actually a miracle. When I think of your dad calling and or finding out that it was a twinkle in somebody's eye, mm-hmm. It hadn't been birthed yet, and that he would call and you would get on the board and then become a director,
mm-hmm.
and then you would be supportive of Yvonne.
Mm-hmm.
It is,
yeah.
It's an unbelievable miracle.
Yeah.
I am so thrilled for you. And I can't wait to come to dinner some Tuesday night.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay? And maybe even, if you'll let me, come with you into Lemon Creek so I know what I'm,
great. Yeah.
A little better what I'm talking about. But our time is over, and I want to thank you, Cara Nelson and Yvonne Bennett, for your very personal knowledge of the huge hurdles that women face when they leave prison. And thank you both for your candor, and thank you, Cara, for your dedication to the well-being of women who need another chance at a healthy life. And Jeff Brown is here with me in the studio tonight. And I want to thank Jeff a lot for many, many years. He's operated deftly the technology when other folks aren't present that makes this show happen. And he has provided consistent encouragement for my efforts on this show. And thank you to you, our listeners, for tuning in. Please join us for another edition of Mind Over Matter on another Monday evening next month. Good night.